What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Conquest,
podcast where we talk about conventions, fandom, and all things pop culture. We're your hosts, Kat
and Shinmo, and this week we're talking about games.
Yeah.
Board games, video games, party games,
independent games, tabletop games.
We recently went to I don't even remember the name of it. What was the name of it?
The Boston Festival of Independent Games.
It's way too long for me to remember. It was called B-Fig.
Big Fig, yeah.
And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, it's a figurine convention.
No.
But then, yeah. Then they were explaining to me, I was like, oh, this one sounds fun. Okay. And it was. It was a fun time.
Imagine if I just took you to a convention where it's just all curio cabinets full of little tiny figurines of, like, kittens and children in raincoats.
I mean,
don't make jokes about potential cons, because they definitely exist.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I honestly felt like you were describing Indian in the Cupboard, and I was like, I could be kind of into that.
I love that movie. No, but when I was doing a search the other day for festivals and conventions in New England, I got so many craft fairs.
Oh, there's a lot.
So I did the same thing.
We're on the same website.
Yeah.
They're all over the place.
Too many.
But yeah, this week it's not just us talking. We have a couple guests. You guys want to go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Oh, sure. Hey, let me try that one more time. Hi, everybody. I'm BWK. Is that good enough for an intro?
Yeah, perfect.
Oh, phew. I passed.
I'm Amanda.
And listeners know me. I'm Katrina's lesser half, no. Tim Champa.
Well, I mean, I feel like you're just part of the regular host now.
Yeah, you're like
we've
our
done
third host.
Four episodes and you've been on three.
Yeah, and I did promise the listeners last time that I'd give them a break for a while, so...
Way to break a promise.
I'm already breaking promises.
Way to go.
Well, maybe that's what you meant by a break.
Oh!
Oh, nice.
Clever. Clever boy.
Yeah, so we went last weekend to this convention. Kat and I went with Tim, a couple of our other friends, Amanda and Brian, that you guys weren't able to attend, although we met up with Amanda after, went to a fun arcade, which is, I won't lie, probably my favorite part of the day.
I mean,
ooh, that does
can
not bode well for
no,
the convention.
I'm making this sound really bad. And I actually, I had fun at the convention. It was exactly what it was. Indie. It was very small.
Very
it was
indie.
On the MIT campus in their gymnasium or
yeah,
one of their
the Johnson
gyms.
Athletic Center.
How many square foot?
72,000 square feet.
Wow, that's huge.
It was at Patriot Place.
I also heard it was about 90 degrees in there.
Oh, my God. It was hot as balls in there.
The bottom floor, when you walked in with all the tabletop stuff, was average temperature. I was like, this is nice. And then we went upstairs to where it was more the video game section. And I did one lap with you, Kat, and I was like, I will be downstairs.
It made no sense to me that it was that hot up there, because you would think that they would want to keep all the consoles and computers cool, and it was 5,000 degrees.
I immediately started sweating. Granted, I was wearing the wrong clothes anyway, because I thought it was supposed to be
cold
out.
I had on a jean jacket, because it was supposed to be like 65 degrees, and
I
then we got there and it was
and black
500.
Jeans on, so it sucked.
We were
the
not dressed
sucks.
For that convention properly.
No.
What was
no,
this
no.
convention for exactly? Was it for video games and board games?
Yeah, so they had tabletop games and board games on the first floor, and then on the second floor it was all the video games and like apps.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was cool.
And
they
all
had
Boston made stuff?
I'm not sure if it was Boston made specifically.
I don't think it was
just
all
hosted
local
in
stuff.
Boston. Yeah. And it was a nice mixture of new games that had just been released and produced, and then other people that were still in their Kickstarter periods, and then some student games.
Cool.
I didn't go this year because I wasn't able to make it, but I usually go with my school. I'm a professor at a school that teaches game design, so I usually go as part of that. My school was there. Becker College was there, but it's a lot of college students and a lot of also high school. Like, really, I don't know if you guys saw that this year. Was there a lot of high school students there?
Not that I noticed.
I mean, I wasn't really looking at people's age, to be honest with you. Although I did see when we went upstairs, Becker was up there, and I was like, oh, Amanda's here. And you're like, no, she's going to meet us after. I was like, oh, okay. All right, sure.
Can I ask a question to Chinmo?
Yeah.
How do you look at someone's age?
Well, you know, I mean, it takes real depth to really look at it.
You just go up and ID everyone.
Mm-hmm. But did you work at a convenience store or a liquor store before or something?
I've bounced before. It happens, you know?
It's like those people that are like, I don't see color.
Yeah. Or on the opposite side of that, where he's like, go a step right up. I'll guess your age and weight.
I'm running a carnival.
You're
game
a 12 year old that's 95 yeah. pounds, and they're like, "Sir, I am 85 and I am 102.
Step right up and guess my wage, and I'll give you a free copy of my video game."
But no, I wasn't looking. I mean, I walked in, and I was like, "Oh, it's not full of children, or it's not like a senior, it's not a senior citizen's home."
He's not disappointed. Oh, I was hoping to see a bunch of kids.
Well, I don't know. It was a game convention, so.
Can I just say that I almost said a bunch of hot kids? but I was going to reference how hot it was in the convention, temperature-wise.
Yeah, it was very warm.
Can you edit this?
Yes. No. Nope.
I liked
all.
It, though, because it was like, they're like, let's make it like a true LAN party. It's hot as balls, and it smells like Cheetos.
Were there vendors?
No, there were vending machines where you could get water and Mountain Dew.
Yeah. It's like just good enough.
Yeah. I think the best part about it is they didn't actually close down the gym. There were people there working out. Like there's a pool.
Yeah.
There's people swimming in the pool and everything. So like it was still a full.
Are you
gym,
fucking kidding me?
No.
There was a convention going on and there were people swimming in the pool.
Yeah, there was like a swim meet happening.
You guys are making this sound very negative. What are some of the positive things you saw there?
And frankly, I could have gone for a dip.
It sounded hot. Maybe you should have brought your swimsuit.
We are. We
honestly,
are really.
So, if I could just say for a moment, one of the things that I really wanted to do at this convention is promote Drinking Buddies, and I found this very helpful.
Quick
because
question.
It immediately
before
made,
you go on.
Sure.
For the listeners, what is Drinking Buddies?
So Drinking Buddies is a game that I've developed over the past couple of years with friends, just kind of refining it and what have you. It's a strategic drinking game. It's card-based for 4 to 8 players. You really put me on the spot here, Chinmo.
Well, I
yeah,
just...
Yeah,
I just... All you had to say, it was a game I invented.
It's a game I invented.
There
anyway,
we
are...
We'll get
so
into more depth.
Why didn't you just say it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's his game. I didn't want to take the crap, you know?
It's, yeah, well, I'll get it, time permitting, we'll get into some more details later on, but suffice it to say, it's a game that created and am going to try and produce over the next 6 months or so, and so thought we would use this event to promote the game. We didn't find out about it until too late to actually pay to have a booth there.
Yeah, we
so
only found out about it last
we're like, oh,
month.
We'll just print some flyers and, like, come and hand them out, thinking... my thought was that all these companies promoting their games there would be really established, and so it would just be kind of like, oh, well, we're like little indie startup thing, so here's our game, you should check us out. And literally every booth was like, sign up for our Kickstarter, and I was like, okay, well, you have a booth here, so I'm not going to give you a paper flyer that I printed out being like, sign up for my Kickstarter. So the value I found in it is that it made me realize how important it is to up your game and use an event like this to try and boost your audience.
It's a really competitive environment, and you don't really like see that because it's also a really supportive environment, indie game scene. So you don't really see that it's also very competitive because everyone's being so damn supportive too. But yeah, I've showed up to a convention before with my game, and of course, time permitting, we'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah.
Is that okay with you, Chin, or should I?
I just, let's yeah.
Soup to nuts, what is the game?
We'll talk later. But so
this episode has already gone way off, way off the rails. Yep.
When we started the episode, I was like, you guys are always so positive. I'm going to make it a little negative.
You know what? Job well done.
Yeah. Hey, what are we, 10 minutes in? Yeah. I've already ruined your confidence. So, but I've showed up at conventions with my game too, and people are like super supportive and everything, but like nobody could just like sit down and look at it, you know, like because they're promoting their own stuff, so they don't really have time to.
I did see a few people in the like convention shirts, and I'm not sure if they were all at booths for their own games or just working the convention that were hopping around to different booths
yeah,
and playing
like
different people's games.
Like staff working the event, but the majority of ones. People I saw, they were sitting down playing a game.
Yeah, and it felt a little bit in like PAX in that way, where you had to wait in line to play a game, so you had to pick one that you really wanted to play and just kind of wait it out and observe. But that was kind of the fun part of it too, because you were like, I am drawn to artwork like first over everything, so even just for me, like looking at people's signage and their cards and their games.
There was a couple like very visually stimulating games that, I mean, the one we'll probably get into in a minute, it was all visual, definitely caught both of our eyes.
Yeah. We, like, saw the sign and stopped and were like, we need to see what this game is.
But then there were a few of them. I mean, they look cool, but then you would hear how they were explained and you'd be like, wow, this is, like, very time-consuming. Like, some of them, like, there were some games that were like, oh, it's quick 10, 15 minutes. And there are other ones like, oh, let's sit down for 3 hours while we play this game.
Yeah, like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah, that's, like, the whole day.
Yeah.
Amanda, you said you used to work this event, right? Did you ever work it?
I didn't work at Boston Fig, but I was attended. I attended it with
on behalf
college.
Of the college. Oh, okay. I was going to ask, was it your part of your job to just play games?
Like, no, I mean, we did that because usually when we attend events, even at like PAX, we've kind of worked it out so that we get the students to do all the work for us. And then like me and the other professors, we can just kind of walk around and enjoy. So that's usually what happens.
Good plan.
That's a good thing to reveal on the podcast.
Child labor. It's the way to go.
Well, your students actually, so they usually design games to showcase at PAX that, like, draw people in to play at your booth so then they can tell them more about the program, right?
Yeah, and we've always had, like, senior projects, so usually the seniors are the most experienced, so we showcase their projects. But this, like, just last year, not to go off on a Becker tangent, but we just launched Games.
Do it!
We just launched Game Studio. So now we have 20 different classes that are independent game studios, essentially. So, like, each class is its own little studio, and we make a game. And so, like, for example, my studio this year is a Microsoft HoloLens studio, so we actually get to use the Microsoft HoloLens and make a game. And
what
we'll
the hell? That's incredible.
That's awesome.
It's pretty awesome. So we'll show that at PAX this year. But, yeah, the rest of the games, it's all, like, student. There's some independent student games that we call Greenlit because we stole that idea from Steam. And so they apply, and then we say, okay, yeah, you're a good enough group of students that you can be an independent team, and I just check in with them every 2 weeks, almost like a thesis project.
And
so I'm like an advisor.
Those teams would go to conventions like the one that you guys went to?
The ones that are good enough.
Yeah. Are they still paying for that themselves? I'm sorry, why do I have so many questions? I'm
no,
not interviewing
go for
you,
it.
but are they paying for the attendance of that, or does the college cover that kind of stuff?
No,
like, are
usually,
they there
no.
on behalf of the college?
Yeah, no, they're there on behalf of the college. So we have like the Becker booth, which is like a larger booth at PAX, not like one of the little indie ones, but we have like the double space. So it's pretty big, and we can usually showcase like 10 to 15 games on the different computers and different spaces that we have within the booth.
Mostly digital games, right?
Yeah, mostly digital. We have usually like one tabletop game a year. This year, there's a group making like a tabletop RPG.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if that'll be ready for PAX, but yeah, there's usually like one tabletop game floating
around. What's the playtime? 4 hours?
I don't know. I'm tentative.
At least 8 to 10.
Yeah.
For most tabletops.
I love the ambition that people have like very early on with their game development. Oh, we'll talk about game development later, but it always starts with, oh, I'll just get a bunch of strangers to commit 13 hours to this.
Yeah, so it's a hefty, like, command sometimes. You're like, that's a commitment.
I, Facebook today had a, you know, one of your annual memories pop up that was like, a year ago today, I shared pictures of the latest iteration of the Drinking Buddies cards. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that was a year ago? I can't believe how much time I've spent on this, and all I could think of was Ben Wyatt from Parks and Rec, like,
well, Cones of Dunshire.
This, yeah, this is nothing, right? Like
throwing it out.
Are these cards a metaphor? Yes and no.
what else did you guys see at the convention?
We did see some cool stuff.
Yeah,
I know we sounded kind of negative first, but there were some. Granted, there were some games that.
Yeah,
like,
some gems that we.
Threw us away, but there were some really good ones.
The one that was our favorite was Visitor in Blackwood Grove.
Is this the one that was visually striking?
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. It was like the most beautiful cards I've ever seen.
I think they are starting a Kickstarter in the next month or two or something like that.
No, they finished up their Kickstarter, and the game will actually be available for purchase in February.
That's
or they're
going to
start shipping them out in February. Mm-hmm. And they actually won the Fig. Or the Figgies is what they call their awards.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. The Figgies fan favorite tabletop of the whole convention.
Describe the art for me.
So it was like...
I'm curious.
It was pencil driven. It looked like it was colored pencil a little bit. It looked like children's book illustrations.
Yeah, it was very calming though.
Yeah.
It was not like overstimulating almost. It was very subtle, but it's very hard to explain.
Yeah, so what the game was, it reminded me a lot of E.T. So you...
Cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. So you're an alien. Well, it's... I forget how many players it was. Is it at least three players? I think it's 3 to 6.
Yeah, we played
three
with
eight.
There was four of us playing. Yeah. And I think you could add another at least another three or four players.
Yeah. So one player is the alien that crashes in Blackwood Grove, and items fly out of your spaceship, and some of them stay in the spaceship, and some of them fly out of the spaceship. Mm-hmm. And the alien gets to decide the rule of what is in the spaceship and what's outside the spaceship.
And it could be literally anything they come up with. Like, I think the example I had on the card was things made of metal. One of the girls we played with who was the alien, her rule was things you'd find on a pirate ship.
Yeah, so she, so I played the kid role. So there's the kid, which is befriending and helping the alien. And
the visitor.
The visitor.
The visitor, yes.
And then there are secret agents. There was an FBI agent. I think Chinmo was a CIA agent.
I was, yeah. I think there was NSA. There was basically all like the big government agencies.
It's a lot of bureaucracy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
think about how long it took them to make that game.
Oh, I know.
And what I liked about that too is because when usually in like talking like ET and stuff, mm-hmm. you see all these agencies like come together, go for the alien, and that is the point of the
do you know who the agents are?
No, it's just set like on the card, it just
well,
says
yeah,
FBI
so
agent,
the player like the visitor knows
the
yeah.
So the kid gets up to three turns, and all the cards are just objects. So there are two cards laid down at the beginning of the game, and the alien has to decide, or the visitor has to decide between the two cards what's inside the ship and what's outside the ship, and then make a rule based on that. So our visitor got a hot dog and a pineapple. So she picked up the pineapple and said, this is inside and the hot dog is outside. So then as the kid, I got seven cards and I got to...
And there, all the cards are. There's no words or anything. It's literally just small
objects.
Little cards with pictures of different random objects. And there was probably 100, 150 cards throughout the whole game.
Yeah, something like that.
And they said there was expansion too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of options, which is cool.
So I saw a pineapple, and you get to, like, pick up to three cards of what you want to guess as the kid. So I put down a couple jungle animals because I was like, oh, maybe it's tropical or jungle-themed, and they were all outside of the ship. But then the CIA agents and the FBI agents get to show their guesses to the visitor, and the visitor gets to say if whether it's inside or outside without them having to guess.
And we don't show, like, as, like, I was the CIA agent, we don't show... Like, I'm not working with the FBI or anything. We're working against each other. And we don't show anybody but the alien or the visitor what we chose. And they either say yes or no. And only we know if it's in or out of the spaceship.
So is the goal to get the objects in your hand to be inside the spaceship?
No. The object, as the kid, is to earn the trust of the alien and guess the
rule
and save the alien so it can, like,
leave.
Escape.
Yeah.
And the role of an agent is to figure out the rule
before
that happens and dissect the alien.
Got it. Cool.
It was super fun. It was only like a 15-minute game, give or take.
Yeah, and our rule ended up being things in a pirate ship, which was fun.
So
as a visitor, you can literally make up any rule you want, which, like...
Because there should be citrus on a pirate ship, right?
Right.
And there's no need for hot dogs.
No, exactly. They needed citrus because of the scurvy. So I had, like, pineapples was a clue, and then a treasure chest was a clue, and rope. So I put in a sword and said it was inside the ship, and she said yes. So then I knew that it had something to do with pirates.
Yeah. It was very fun.
Yeah.
It was quick, and it was like you keep going.
Yeah.
So you said it's coming out in February?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was, like, I think that might have been the only game that I saw where I was like, I will actually, once this is out, I will go and buy it.
I think they said it, they like, funded on Kickstarter, and they're just waiting to actually sell.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Can I talk about another game?
Yeah.
There was one game there that I thought was such a cool concept. It was a sci-fi game called Salvage, where the idea is that you and your competitors, all of your spaceships had broken down in this space quadrant, and the parts
Seeing
of your ship...
theme here.
There
was a lot of sci-fi type games.
And a lot of broken ships.
I mean, how
else you I've got another one to mention that is not in this arena, but...
we have another sci-fi one.
Oh, it's not a good story, though.
No.
But this... Salvage is a game where all the competitors' spaceships have broken down in an area of space. Their parts of their ship that they need to leave are spread out across this gridded map. And the idea is that you're trying to get these different pieces of your ship in order to fly away, and the first person who's able to like rebuild their ship and get out of this area wins. And the more pieces you accumulate to rebuild your ship, the faster you can move across the board. So you're competing with different players for these ship parts to escape.
It's a board game? Like
it
a
is,
dice
yeah.
dice game? How do you move?
I think it's a card-based game, almost like, I guess like a dice game. Like almost, you'd think of it like D&D, like where you'd have a gridded map and you're like rolling for your moves and all that. There's like a huge card-based element to it too, if you want to attack other players and fight them for ship parts and that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love
cool
it.
Concept, yeah.
It's really cool. There's another game that I really liked. I wish I could remember what it was called, but
it's why you
just
take
can't.
Notes. This is why you take notes.
I know.
Notes.
I even took their business card with me, but
that is the best note you could have taken.
I know. They took it for me. I want to say it's called like Trapper or something like that, but the idea is that
Trappist, right?
That sounds like a brewery.
It is. Trapper Keeper. It was Trapper Keeper.
You're making shit up. But the concept is you're with a bunch of other people out in a mystical wilderness, and there are creatures that come up as you unveil the deck. And if they start attacking you, then you have to fight them together. The idea is that you're trying to gather materials in order to create traps to catch the monsters. And so it's very collaborative. The players are all, they all have their cards out on the table so you can see what everybody has. So you can be like, hey, you've got that piece that I need to help us build this trap to catch this monster. So it's really
cool. I like
co-op
concept.
Games like that. That's pretty cool.
Me too.
It's cool, and I feel bad for the young man who was explaining this game to me because he was really struggling to articulate the game.
That was the problem of a couple people there, to be honest with you.
It was that I had that same experience where there are several games in a row where you're like, this game sounds awesome. I wish the person explaining it to me knew how to explain it to me.
That's like, I mean,
I just have a soft burn for you. Remember when you needed to quickly explain your game?
I know.
Earlier?
but believe me when I say that what I'm referring to was a good 10 minutes where I kept regularly having to be like, oh, so you mean your game is this? And they're like, that's a great way to put that.
I'm just buffering for when I eventually have to clumsily explain my game that I've been working on for 4.5 years, and you think I'd have it down by now?
See, I don't think, like, a few of the booths, like, a lot of the people there working were very personable and great, but then there were, like, those very...
Or some of the ones where you're just standing in front of their booth talking,
yeah,
not to them or paying attention to their game, and they're like, hey, come play my game. And I know you have to do that to get game exposure.
Yeah, I mean,
it makes
sense. You're trying to get people
like,
to see it.
I got suckered into playing a tabletop game that, like, was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I ultimately didn't...
Then he walked away.
And then, yeah. So it was, like, this kind of intricate tabletop game where it was, like, an RPG, and it was card-based, so you had all your stats on the side of the card. And...
It definitely seemed like it was one of those games where if you played it full length, you'd be sitting down for a few hours.
Yeah, a few hours. And he gave me an easy puzzle, and I was like, okay, great, that was fun. And then he was like, I have some more for you to do. And I was like, I'll do one more. And then during the middle of that next one, someone came up to him to give him something, and he walked away.
And I remember we were both standing there. I was like,
you showed enough interest to play two rounds of this guy's game that you didn't want to play,
and he walked away.
He was like, here, take this card and figure out the puzzle, and then walked
away.
And
it wasn't like a quick walk away, like, oh, give me 1 second. He was gone for a good 2 to 3 minutes, which doesn't sound long, but
no,
we were standing
forever there.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, do we just put the card down and walk away? And we should have.
But I felt too rude to do that, so
We finished the puzzle.
Yeah, finished the puzzle, and we were like, all right. Peace. Like, he's like, oh, give me your email address. And I was like, yeah,
we got the card. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. And then,
I mean, he's a very nice guy, but it took him a while to explain, and it was a little confusing, and then he gave me a puzzle and sauntered off into the sunset, and I was holding cards.
Amanda, as somebody who's like worked these events before, how bad are the people at the events? Is Chin and Kat are
accurate?
Yes.
I'm not gonna say anything bad about students, but you're talking about game design. You always have a certain group of people that is not exactly personable, to use the word that you used before. Yeah. But you'll find that the ones that are very personable are the ones that seem to rise to the top. So that definitely has a lot to do with it. But, you know, there's some people, you don't have to be able to talk to people. If you're a really excellent programmer or a really great artist, then you don't have to be the person out front talking to people. You can still be a great game developer. So I think those people that you're talking about at those booths should have probably picked somebody else to be their marketing face.
There's a couple things there. First of all, you got the sense, at least I did, that at a lot of these booths, the people helping to promote these games or explain them are just like really good friends of the people that created them. So it's not like
there
a
was
legit,
at least two
I mean, it's an indie game festival. So it's not like an established company. It's not like IBM being like, let me tell you about our new product. It's just like the dude's best friend saying, I play this with him sometimes. It's really fun. Let me do my best to explain it. You know,
that's what it seemed like. It was all good friends or like couples or like husbands and wives.
Well, what about the people like coming up to the booths? They have their own challenges, don't they? I mean, I always and Kat and Chin, I'm sure you guys are nothing but pleasant, but like, I always think about that when I go to like conventions like this. I'm like, am I the problem here? Is it me, like the potential consumer, that's the problem?
I experienced that same thing because we were walking by.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like a dick kind of after. Like, I honestly meant nothing by
it. So funny.
We were walking by one of the booths, and this guy, like, we just happened to linger too long, and this guy, who, I mean, he was very nice, very friendly, but he wasn't the best, like, promoter, I'd say. And he's
kind of stumbling over his own explanation.
And he's like, oh, do you want to know about the game? So I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. And I won't say the name or anything. And it just seemed like a very cool concept. The concept of it was there's a bunch of different alien races on a space station.
Is this the other sci-fi one you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, the other sci-fi one.
And one alien breathes oxygen, one breathes nitrogen, like carbon. Like everybody has something different.
Which to me sounded a lot like Valerian in the City of 1,000 Planets, where it's just that one space station where all these different
things
races
together,
are coming together and just existing on the same station.
I think that helps articulate this game to 4 or 5.
I was going to say, that movie, not a lot of people saw that movie.
And not a lot of people needed to see that movie.
But yeah, he's explaining it in the way he's like, oh, so it's basically...
That's what that movie is called.
I think it is.
Yeah,
it is.
The City of 1,000... City of 1,000 Planets.
It's Valerian, House of 1,000 Corpses.
Yes, yeah, that's the one.
But yeah, he's explaining this, and he's describing it as... he's like, yeah, it's basically a bunch of aliens and creatures fighting for control of, like, the thermostat on the space station. So I just casually made a joke, and I was like, oh, so it's like any other household. And I didn't do it, like, in, like, a dick way. It was, like, a very,
like you're
funny,
just trying
like,
to, like...
Kat was kind of laughing. It was,
no,
like,
I'm
giggle.
Just cringing at how bad the joke is.
I thought it was all right.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a clever summation of what the game was. Yeah, I don't think it's an insult to the designer.
And that would have killed on Kevin Can Wait.
Ouch. No, but yeah, he's like, I was like, so it's like any other household, like going for the temperature.
And then
room.
His face just dropped, and he was like,
he was not happy with me. And at that point, I was like, I want to walk away. But it was not big enough to where I could walk away and him not see me.
Yeah, we walked by them at least 3 other times.
Yeah, and I was like, I gotta sit through the rest of this pitch with this guy just kind of glaring at me.
And then he was like, do you guys want to sit down and play? We're starting a new round. It only takes an hour.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Yeah. I was like, no, thank
you. Yeah. If you want me to play your game, like, if it takes an hour, come up with a quick
version.
I'll play a round. I don't want to play the whole game if it takes that long.
That's what really sold me when we played the visitor game. When I was like, this game looks awesome. And she's like, oh, it only takes about 15 minutes. I was like, I'm fucking sold. Let's do it.
Yeah. And that other game that you and Charlene played.
It's
Cheer Up.
Cheer Up. Yeah. It was very, it's a very kind of Cards Against Humanity feel, but it seemed much more lighthearted and fun.
Yeah. And it did have kind of a twist on it.
It did. It was very personal for the people you're playing with. It was, you get a card and it says either, A, B, or C, you got to pick up two cards from each of them, and you get a card to either B and C, A, B, and C, or C and B. You have, like, different combos, and then there'll be a prompt card. Ours was describe your childhood, and you had to use a card from pile A, B, and C. So you had six cards. You had to choose one from each letter, and they were all random.
You won your round, didn't
you? I did. It was I described it as a pirate that is always cheerful and ends his sentences with ta-da. And the winner picks it and stuff like that.
So it's like Cards Against Humanity, but you get to throw down three cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it was
not to oversimplify it.
No. Sure, it's more when he was I was like, I don't want to be like saying you're like, he's like, no, it's very similar to that, but I like this one better than Cards Against Humanity because you had to know the people you were playing with kind of a little bit more. So it was a very good game for friends. Definitely a good party game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was different too because there were like some like raunchier, like very goofy cards and stuff like that. And it's,
yeah, did they, it was fun. It called like not something about
not
like,
safe for grandma.
Not safe for grandma. Yeah. That was the expansion pack that had like the raunchier cards.
Yeah. It was very fun. It was a fun little game. And there was like some rule cards, like you had to sing your answers and stuff like that. So it was cool. It was fun.
I stalked their Kickstarter afterwards, and they had like a section where they had quotes, and they had a few different publications being like, this game's really fun. I had a great time playing it. And a few quotes like that in a row. And then one that was like, I'm not saying that word. My grandma.
My grandma.
That's cute. But Amanda, do you find that the people coming up to your booth are part of the problem? Or is it mostly the people running that are the problem?
Why is there a problem?
I like to stir shit up.
Yeah, you said you were going to start shit.
Tell me about the worst thing you've ever seen.
That's a real loaded question.
Not even just at a convention like a car accident ever in your whole life. What's the worst thing you've ever seen?
What's the bloodiest scene you've ever seen?
Oh, my God. No, I don't know. I don't know that it's a problem. I think it's just...
So you've had nothing but sweet people come up to you at conventions?
Yep, sweet, adorable, awesome people. No, not at all.
It's such a professional answer.
Well, the other thing...
fakest answer, even from your face.
The other thing that was occurring to me is very similar to what you were saying, Amanda, where it's like, just because you're a great programmer, you know how to, or you're a great designer, you know how to make a great game, does not mean you know how to market yourselves. And that is... that's what business is. Like, you have most established businesses have different departments that handle all that stuff. People that manage and develop products are not the same people that market those products because it's a totally different skill set. And when you're talking about a scenario where you're kind of doing all of that because it's just an indie startup, there you obviously run the risk that either a game is incredible and the person sucks at marketing it, or the game sucks and the person's incredible at marketing it, and it's very rare that somebody would be really good at all of the components that you need to make a successful product work. I think Shinmo's throwing shade at me right now. I don't know which of those things he's telling me I'm bad at, but...
No, that was not... that was a bad joke on my part. We can just quickly move on.
It also kind of looked like a fart, but I don't want to...
Were you also just saying, like, I am the perfect mascot, sponsor, designer?
That was just a horrible joke. Please, let's just move on.
No. I need you to explain yourself. I'm very confused about what just happened.
Yeah, I didn't even catch it.
Yeah.
That's good. All right.
No, I think that was a really excellent point, though, about, like, how just because you're good at something doesn't mean you're good at marketing that
was
thing.
Your point.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's just reiterating, and I'm reiterating that he reiterated.
But just to put it in a different context, because we don't – I mean, we're talking about it in the gaming world here, but I think at least a couple of us work in the software industry, and you see that same thing. There are people at my company who are brilliant technical resources who I would never put on the phone with a client because that just – they're not people. And there is – the people in our company who are brilliant from a technology standpoint – who are also great at people management are the exception. And those are the people that literally are in the C-suite running the company because that skill set, that combined skill set is so rare and valuable.
My perspective of it is a little bit different coming from education because, like, especially at – I'll use PAX as an example because I didn't go to FIG this year. But, like, when we're at PAX, even if we have the people that are there representing their games – because, like, last year we had – I think 10 different games that we rotated throughout the day that people were showcasing. And we would tell the teams to choose who they wanted to represent their game. And even though some of those people were like, you know, they're still in college, they're like a little bit socially awkward, not all of them, but if they are, we use that as like a teachable moment. So I'm not going to like explain your game for you. Like if somebody comes up and they want to know about your game, we like push them ahead and it's like, it's okay if you mess up. This is a learning experience. So I still treat those like conventions as learning experiences. And even like that awkward conversation you had, Jinmo, with one of the developers, like that was probably a learning experience for him. So think of that as a positive.
Because yeah. I can imagine that too.
Because he was awfully mad.
I can imagine that too being an instance where when you're having to explain your game or your idea and you're having trouble explaining it, that maybe you're like, this might be too complex, or maybe this part of it doesn't work, or maybe I need to rethink what I've named this portion of it. So even just saying it out loud to someone that has no idea what you're talking about can definitely help you develop, I would assume. I don't want to speak.
I think that's where like the elevator pitch part like comes in. Like if you can explain your not that we're at that section here, but
I was
like
gonna say that's a perfect segue. So get ready there, guys. It's coming up.
Yeah. But if you can explain your game in 30 seconds or less and get most of the mechanics, I mean, you could always expand that out. You know, say, oh, here's my game in a nutshell. But then,
should
of course,
I time you right now?
I was gonna say we're gonna we are now putting you guys on a time limit.
I
you
sort of
both have
this.
A minute to describe your games, whether
sort of
people
this.
Buy or not. I like this.
You can finish your thought and then I'm gonna.
Well,
you.
I'm just saying that like working on the elevator pitch is such a hard sell. It's so hard to not only just like clearly describe your game, but also do it in a way that you think hits the most interesting parts. That's to me was very difficult.
And each time you do it, you're going to get better and better.
Yeah.
So
and
three,
the
two,
description
one, go.
Will get worse and worse.
Yeah. So Tim, take notes because you're up next, buddy.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Oh, I'm going to go first.
Oh yeah.
You're
going to
go first. Well, we already like kind of heard Tim's elevator speech. Elevator pitch.
What the fuck?
All right, BWK, you ready?
Yes.
So, on your mark, get set, go.
Okay, so my game is a reluctant card battle game where you reluctantly work as a team to explore a haunted mansion and find inheritance while working with and also against your estranged family members. The game plays technically two to four players total. You can also have three in there. And it revolves around two decks in the center of the table that represent doors. Each person on their turn will take a turn. this is a lot of pressure. Opening one of the two doors by flipping the card over from one of the two decks. Behind those doors are either ghosts that you have to fight to earn inheritance, or these twist doors which change the rules of the game. Ooh. Everyone starts with two life tokens, and you will lose life tokens if you can't defeat ghosts, if you come across a ghost. If you can defeat a ghost on your own, you get to steal whatever inheritance that ghost is holding. If you can't, you have to force somebody else to fight that ghost with you. If you can do it together, way to go. You guys put that money into a family trust, which can be won, lost, or stolen from later in the game. How am I doing on time?
You are at a minute and 15 seconds.
Oh, wow. That did not feel that long.
I got to tell you, for a minute pitch, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Minus one thing.
Yeah.
What's the name of your game?
You didn't name the game.
Oh, okay. It's called Knock Knock. That should start there, I guess.
Which is the perfect name for that game.
Thank you.
And Grant, I know it's probably changed. I haven't played it in probably almost 2 years. But it is a super fun game, and you described it very well.
It plays in about, it depends on really the cards that come up, but you can play the game as fast as 15 minutes or as long as over an hour. Most play sessions, I've demoed the game like hundreds of times, and most play sessions last about 25 minutes.
Which is like the perfect kind of amount you want for a type of game like that, like a card game like that.
And the battle mechanic is matching colors and numbers. It's as simple to play as Uno. So I've played with my nephew, who was 4 at the time. He's 7 now. And then I've played with my grandmother, who was at the time and is now. everyone can like easily pick it up. It looks pretty complicated when you get all the cards out on the deck and everyone's holding their on the table, and everyone's holding like a handful of attack cards and all these. It looks complicated, but then you see it played once. You see just how to open a door or how to play a trick card. And that's all you really need to know. The rest of the game just unfolds for you. And it's really simple.
That's how I felt, actually, the first time, because I came over to your place when you were demoing it with another friend of ours. And I walked in the middle of a game, and you had explained nothing to me. And when I first looked, I was like, well, this game looks a little confusing. But then I watched you play for, honestly, not even 2 minutes. And I was like, this is so easy to pick up. This is so simple. And it looks like a blast. And it really was.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those games where even if you hop into it and you see two people go before you, you're like, all right, I got it.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. That is so rewarding to hear, because you should have seen at the early stages of the game development how unbelievably complex it was. There was like, so everyone has like a color assigned to them, like red, blue, purple, or green.
Not yellow.
It used to be yellow. We switched it out for purple. I switched it out for purple. My team and I. Actually, I do have a team now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have an illustrator and Ashley Beebe, and I have a designer and Taylor Sweeter. And they're incredible, and they've put a lot of work into my game.
Yeah, those cards are beautiful.
Oh, God, it looks gorgeous. It looks so much better than the MS Paint cards I was working with before. Or actually, at the time that you played,
Chin. I say when I played, I think it was paint.
They were like paper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Previously, I had them on index cards, and I was just
That's what it was. I played on index cards. Yeah. And I got to tell you, still fun. Yep.
Yeah, that's quite a compliment, because like you were saying, that thing about the visitor from Blackwood Grove.
Yep.
Yeah.
That game, like, the visuals grabbed you.
Which I feel exactly is what your game does.
Yeah, your game
which is a huge, huge selling point for it.
Thank you. It has like a 18th century horror vibe to it too, a Victorian horror.
Yeah, when you brought the cards in, I was like, oh, Britain, like new cards. They look fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll post a picture of them for everybody to see.
I'm working on developing the box design right now, which is so fun. And a part of the game creation process that I don't think that gets enough credit is like, well, we were talking about marketing earlier, right? But creating the box, and like you get to be so clever with some of this stuff. I'm not so sure about what your plans are for Drinking Buddies box wise, but like for Knock Knock, I have the game is all about like you inherited this haunted mansion, and you have like up to three other strange family members exploring the mansion with you. So they so basically the box comes in like this little sort of like briefcase thing, and there's like letters from lawyers inside of it.
That's
telling
a really
you
cool
like
way
how
to do it.
Yeah, that's like the rule book is like a letter from a lawyer.
I love that.
Yeah, and
Kat says she loves that. We're sharing a microphone.
She's off mic doing that.
Might happen a few times in this episode.
So you get to kind of tell the story, because the game is card based and there's no like story cards, you know. It's just really fun, and also I had help developing the story from Lane Adderidge, who's a really awesome writer, and people have come together to really help me with a lot of those elements.
Nice.
Am I done talking about it?
If you are happy, by all means.
Well,
that was awesome.
I guess maybe just are you comfortable telling us anything about when this game will be available to the public?
I would love to get it out before Halloween of this year.
Oh, soon. Very soon, then.
Yeah, it's not a Halloween game, though, so I really made sure that the game is not Halloween themed. There's no pumpkins, there's no bats, no spiders, there's no orange.
It's very smart.
Yeah, it is not a Halloween game.
There's only one witch, so we're good.
There are actually five witches. shit, I should have thought of that. They're called witches.
but, and four Jack Skellingtons.
Oh, yeah, there's at least four Jack Skellingtons.
And three vampires.
There is a Grim Reaper, too, but that is actually that is true that there is a Grim Reaper.
Well, it's ghost theme though, so it's not like you could really avoid
those
things.
A haunting feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more like a haunted house.
To be truthful, it is the ghost of witches. Does that make any difference?
Yeah.
There's also a mechanic in the game where when you're alive, you help the living defeat the ghosts. But when you die in the game, you become a ghost and you help the ghost defeat the living.
I love that. So even though you're not like alive, you can still play instead of just having to sit there and watch everybody else play.
Part of the game. Those are the best kind of games. Instead of just sitting there like, well, now I got to wait 15 minutes for my friends to finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes the end of those games can take a while. Yeah. But even when you're dead, you can come back through like random twists that happen in the game.
I think that happened when I played. I think Jared brought me back. I was like, oh, cool. And then I got knocked back out.
You only come back with one life token, so it's hard. It's easy to get kicked out after that. But you can still earn money when you're dead, too. And the game ends when everybody is dead. So it's like the richest corpse wins.
So there is no happy ending. Everybody dies.
Yeah, you're briefly happy when you are the last one standing with the most money, but then you die like everyone else.
Kind of like True Life.
Yeah.
Bring it into dark. A dark All place. Right.
All right, Tim.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Your turn, buddy.
Just briefly, though, before I touch on my game, I want to give one final shout out to one of the games that was at Fig. Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah. Sure.
And that's a game called Zero Sum. It is a card game. It's a competitive card game, sci-fi based. The idea is that you work for a corporation in a distant galaxy, and it's sort of like Magic the Gathering in that you're competing with all of your the fellow players, except instead of fighting each other directly, it's very corporate, and you're just trying to fuck everybody over. So you're trying to...
I wish you didn't say over. Then you'd have my money.
It's a card-based, fuck-based game. For 4 to 8
players.
That's
the category of card game.
No, but I just really like that the competition is not direct. It is you are all striving for the same goal, and rather than like directly trying to murder other people or cast spells on them or what have you, you're trying to stab them in the back and screw them over so that
Real
you
life.
Can be the be, yeah, it is very true to life and very corporate. And so yeah, Zero Sum game, check it out.
Wait, you going into your pitch? You ready?
Yes,
we're gonna time it.
Put a minute on the clock.
All right.
You ready?
So there are three primary components to the game. First is that all players have 5 little shots of whatever it is they feel like drinking, and you want to think of that as like your life meter. The game ends the first time any player runs out of all of their shots, and the object of the game is to have the most full shots left over at the end. Every player gets 3 action cards that let you do things like make other players drink one of their shots or let you refill one of yours, and a buddy card, which is color-coded and face-up and displays to everybody. So throughout the game, what you do is you take turns taking new buddy cards, and playing them on top of players' existing buddy cards to change their buddy colors. What that does is any players whose buddy colors match your own are your drinking buddies, and drink and refill actions transfer between the two of you. So the idea is that you play your buddy cards in such a way to maximize the impact of your action cards from turn to turn to help you end the game in the lead.
Okay, I like it.
What do we get on the clock for that? Because that seemed very concise.
You were at a minute 10, so you had 8 seconds less than BWK.
Gentlemen, that was all.
Did that make sense?
No, that did, definitely. And then, granted, you didn't say the name either, but you said it earlier, so we're good.
Drinking Buddies, the drinking man's thinking game.
I love that
which
tagline.
Which I'm always self-conscious about because it's not gender inclusive, and I want it to be. But it doesn't. The drinking person's thinking game doesn't have the same ring to it, so.
Well, it's man, like.
Yeah, like
man,
mankind.
Mankind.
Yeah, sure. Like the wrestler Mankind.
This
is mankind's drinking
for
game.
Mick Foley.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Amanda?
So the drinking, the buddy part, would you describe that as kind of like the rule in Kings where you're dating people, right? So then it's like when you have to date somebody, you're also, they take the same drinks that you take.
Definitely. But one of my favorite things about it is that it's not just when I'm attacking another player and saying, hey, you drink a shot. And your buddy drinks a shot. There's a counter dynamic so that you could say, no, actually, I have this card, which means you have to drink instead of me. So that drink falls back on me and my buddies. So it's right. You have like downstream consequences for failing your attack. So there's like a real strategic element to it because sometimes you might want to buddy yourself up with somebody as a contingency plan because you're like, worst case scenario, I'm going to end up having to drink, so I want to make sure that person has to drink as well because they're tied with me right now, and that means that at least I'll still be even with them at the end of the turn if worse comes to worse. And there's just a lot of that kind of strategy that goes into it that I think makes the game really fun and challenging and interesting. The way I like to describe it is that it's easy to learn, hard to master, and always really fun to play.
Yeah, I
think
that's
very pitchy.
I think the buddying part was like key because you didn't have that in the beginning, right? But you added that later on.
Well, actually, so I always had some sort of buddy system. The game developed out of the name Drinking Buddies. I just thought that would be a great name for a drinking game.
It is.
I didn't mean to say buddies, actually. I meant to say countering. Obviously, it always had the buddying part. I meant to say the countering.
We actually did always have countering. The way it just worked differently. It's had so many iterations, but at first it was set up so that you were a certain color, not unlike another game. You had a specific color.
You treaded on dangerous territory.
Hollow
ground.
So, like, for example, I would be red, and I had two red cards. One of them was for me to keep, and one of them was for me to put on.
What are your color
cards? Oh, God. I can't name them all. There's blue, chartreuse, red, orange.
Sunset yellow.
A burnt orange.
Lots of oranges.
That's funny. I kept orange out of my game.
Really? I wish I had, honestly. It's actually not too late. It's not, like, on the shelves. So.
did it to avoid the Halloween connection.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
he's going
originally, the way that it worked is that you would take one of your two color-coded cards and put it on top of another card. So, like, for my turn, you would be blue, I'd be red, I'd put a red card on top of your card, and now we're red together for the turn, and whatever happens to me also happens to you. And it was a dice-based game, so I'd roll a die, and whatever happened to me would transfer over to you. And so what we tried to do with the countering system is replicate that kind of, like, crit-fail dynamic that you have from D&D, where, like, if you just happen to roll badly, both people have to drink. And so it's like your action, what you'd really like to do on your turn, fails. And the version of that ended up happening is the counter, so that there's that chance that somebody else has the same card that you just played against them. They can play it back on you, and then the
and that keeps it, like, nice and random, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like the random... So Knock Knock has a bunch of random elements to it as well, and I feel like that's what takes a simple mechanic and makes it, like, infinitely playable, is the random elements.
Yeah. How... what was your process for the game, because I know you mentioned that's taking you, like, 4 years. So is it just constantly evolving those mechanics? Like, what was the little
you're talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the little seed that started Knock Knock that eventually evolved into
did
what
you
it
just
is?
Get someone at your door and you're like, I have a great idea now.
I was like, I wonder how much inheritance they got. for me, I always loved the idea of it sounds terrible, but I love the idea of playing with somebody and building an alliance that you ultimately have to destroy, because otherwise you can't win. Like, you know, two people can't win this game.
Yeah.
So, but two people need to work together constantly. So there was a lot of that was the seed.
Mm-hmm.
How do I make a game where people are forced to work together, but then also at some point are going to be forced to deceive each other? So that's what started it. And then over the course of the 4.5 years that I've been making it, there's been a long time waiting for art and waiting for design and things that I don't really have a lot of good, I don't have good control over and I'm not good at, because I can't draw and I can't design anything worth of crap. Well, I can design things that are worth crap. But some of that stuff ate up time. But for the most part, it was taking complex rules and simplifying the hell out of them, because people don't want to learn Magic the Gathering again. You know what I mean? Like,
simple is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always.
Really is.
So when my game first started, each color had like a boost that they were able to do. Like, they were able to, like, red could do this if approached by that, and green could counter that, but only if purple does this, you know, and it was just so complex that people were just, like, taking a long time to wrap their heads around it.
That's, like, the number one thing that I tell my students is to simplify what the hell they're trying to make, because so often they, just like you're saying, like, they come in with, like, these really great ideas and they have pages and pages of documentation and, like, what they want the game to be. And I'm like, why don't you just start with a real simple prototype and then build off of that instead of doing all this work and then having to narrow it down because people don't actually want to play that. And, in fact, this week, one of the assignments that they're working on is I brought all my board games to class that I have, and I gave them out to the groups, and I said, here's your board game. you have to analyze this. That was like the first half of the assignment. And then the second half was like, you have to build your own game now, but you have to use these board games
Ooh,
as your pieces.
That's
yeah,
fun.
They have a lot of fun with it. But so many of them, like this one took the dice game Farkle, which if you're not familiar with it, it's just like you literally just roll dice and you have to get the most points. So
it's
really
fun. It's a fun game.
Yeah, it is fun. And it's a really simple game. They turned it into like this tabletop RPG. And I was like, that's great. I love your ambition, but like you're supposed to be able to play this in like 5 minutes in class. But you know, they had fun with it, and that's the whole point of the assignment, is to, you know, learn something from it. But the number one thing is like simplify.
That yeah. is absolutely, I think, the hardest part of game design, because there's so much of it that is just problem solving. You're like, okay, well, I really like this idea for a mechanic. Why don't I figure out the best way to do that? And so you play test it and you're like, oh, it doesn't really work because there's this kind of unforeseen consequence that I hadn't really thought about that really complicates the game. And you just have to sort of sacrifice your sacred cows kind of a lot, ideas that you might kind of like that don't end up really working because they just add complexity that isn't needed. Like the complexity doesn't outweigh or the complexity outweighs the fun that mechanic adds.
Or ultimately,
to the game.
It isn't a fun mechanic,
sure.
but you spent a long time building it. You know,
yeah.
I ran into that a lot. But to speak to that thing that you were talking about, I had this element in my game where you can like doors can become locked, and you have to find a key to unlock the door deck. So there's two decks of cards in the center of the table, and if you flip over a certain card, it might say this deck is now locked, and you can no longer draw from that deck of cards. Until you find a key, right? So I was playing that game. I was playtesting it and stuff. And a lot of times, both decks would end up locked. And nobody could get a key because they were probably locked behind the door decks. And it took so much time to find, like, okay, well, maybe there'll be trick cards. But then you don't get trick cards very often. So that would run again. Or, well, maybe there's only one locked door, but then it would never come up. And it was this, like, hidden mechanic that would never approach. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe there is locked doors, but the key is now an attack card. Well, that's fine, but now people are running out of attack. Now people are, like, hindered by having a key, so they throw it out all the time. And like, that was I know that was a long explanation to say that, like, ultimately, locked doors became more of a hassle than it was worth. It's still in the game. But it took a real long time to work out a mechanic that is basically not fun.
I think you both have, I mean, granted, BWK, I haven't played your game in a while, but when I did, it was fun, and it seems like you just made it more fun and even simpler.
Thank you. I hope so.
I'm excited to play it again after this. And Tim, over the past couple of weeks, I've played your game quite a bit, and from someone that doesn't even drink, I highly enjoy it.
We're just saying something.
Yeah.
Because
it's a drinking game.
Yeah, it's a drinking game.
And it's super fun. Even like I don't drink alcohol at all, and I every time I play, I usually play with water or something like that, or soda, and it is still so much fun trying to get everybody else to, like,
you should have to play with like cranberry juice or something you don't want to drink.
I think I played with ginger ale last time, which I like,
and
but
I think
I'm
it was like flat
fan.
Ginger ale
yeah,
too.
I wasn't
so it was kind
put
of
like cayenne pepper in it.
It did not taste well, to say the least. But no, it was super fun because I actually got into it. Like, sure, I wasn't getting drunk with everybody, which is kind of like a point to a drinking game, but it was still such a blast. I was going through it.
That's one of the things that I hope sets it apart and was really kind of the genesis of it, is that I wanted to do a strategic drinking game, something that you have to think about, because I think there's something really fun about, especially for people who do drink, a game that that forces you to think, getting harder and harder the more you play it.
I love that.
Which
do you see that happens when you're doing your playtesting?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Noticed that when I last played it there was a handful of us playing it, and like, yeah, at the beginning everybody was doing really like thinking about it, and then as the night went on, granted, like 4 hours later, it was
people just start making really dumb mistakes.
Get a little sloppy.
It's like if you imagine people drunkenly playing chess, and they just get to a point where you're like, dude,
I know the rules. What am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I just think that's what makes it the strategy is what makes it a great game. The drinking is what makes it a great party game. And that whole dynamic that it gets kind of harder and harder to play the more you play it.
You know what's so funny? My game is a bad drinking game. So you know, like,
can you make it a drinking game?
Well, sure. You know, you can make like anything a drinking game, right?
That's true.
I made this podcast a drinking game.
Yeah, you can make anything. But my game is a bad drinking game, and your game is a great drinking game. Like, it's funny how like there were I've played before where people were like, oh, if A happens, then you have to take a drink or whatever, to see if that would be like something, because people end up adapting it anyway. So like, might as well have a house rules set where it talks like, here's how to make it a drinking game. It's impossible. It's also a bad strip game too.
There's no such thing as a bad strip game.
Depends who you play with.
Yeah. First rule is strip.
Yeah.
Second rule is play the game.
Get their clothes back on.
Well, so
I've never played this, a strip game.
Sure.
I mean, there's time after, so we'll test it out. Well, Tim and BWK have board games or tabletop games, card-based games. But Amanda, you've designed more like video games and app-based games. How is developing the mechanic of that and thinking about those kind of sacred cows that you don't want to give up in the gameplay for that different, you think, than the tabletop aspect?
I think that the development process is probably pretty similar. I mean, it's like you come up with an idea, and the most important thing, I think, is iteration and testing. Mm-hmm. And, like, I always push that in my classes as well, because it's like you're not going to know if it's fun, and you're not going to know if it's worthwhile continuing unless you have other people other than yourselves testing it. Because that's a problem, too, is, like, when you have people on your team testing it, it's like, one, they're going to be nice to you, or even if it's like your close family, they're going to be nice to you.
Right.
And then people on your team know the in and outs of the game. They already know how it works. So you really have to like broaden your market and like have other people test it, even in the early phases, so they can tell you what's wrong with it. Because otherwise, why are you bothering to continue?
Yeah. When Tim was first developing Drinking Buddies, we would play it a lot with like our group of friends and like people close to us, and I was like, you got to start playing it with people that, one, have never played it before in any of its forms, just testing out this format, like groups of people that you haven't played it with before that are going to be honest with you. And like a lot of our group of friends went to Becker, so you all kind of had that game design mind. So I was like, you got to play it with people
mindset.
Yeah, that like are outside of that.
It's tough to play
concept.
With game designers though.
Yeah,
because game designers always want to add elements to your game because they just
very
that's in their blood.
It,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I found it like very whenever it was like, I guess it was just Drinking, but the other one too, the I know we haven't talked about it yet, but that other Pong one that they're working on, like it's very hard in that group of friends to not be like, wait, what about this? So I like try to rein myself in and like actually not comment that much, because I don't, you know, sometimes you don't want so many cooks in the kitchen.
Right.
So, but I have my own projects that I can like put my creativity into. And that's what I usually do with my husband Matt, and we actually are working on a VR game right now. We just started it a couple
weeks
ago.
That's awesome.
When you're working on a video game or like an app or something like that, it must be so hard to give up elements that you put so much time into, because there's all kinds of like coding and art and everything mm-hmm. that goes into that. Like when I gave up the idea, well, I didn't actually give up the idea of locked doors, but if I were to, it would be very easy to just like remove that card from the game. You know, like, it must be devastating to have to take something huge out of like a VR game.
They spent like hours programming.
Right, yeah. Well, see, that's why I'm a big fan of like coming up with a pretty lengthy game design document, but everybody has their own process. Like, I know other designers in the field that like they just like to jump right in and like start mm-hmm. making stuff. And that's a good approach too. It all depends on like what your team is like and how you work together. But I like to have everything really planned out so that we can have a conversation and be like, you know what? This actually isn't going to work. So before you get into to try and make that work, let's redesign that first. The thing that we're working on.
So you're not coding the hell out of this thing and then having to throw it out.
Yeah, but the funny thing about it is actually the thing that we're working on right now is based around all of the little things that Matt has coded, because, like, I'm a designer, he's a programmer, and he'll admit it himself, he's not good at coming up with ideas, and I can't sit down and code for hours on end. I know how to edit code, but
he's
I'm not.
Got the teamwork on.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, he has all these probably, like, a couple dozen different mechanics that are just, like, prototypes that he's made in Unity, like, he's coded them out, but they're not games, and I'm always like, that's really great that you did that, sweetie, but that's not a game. Like, and then we never move on from there. So what we decided to do is take all of those little prototypes that he has, and we're going to mash them together into a game. And he's like, how is that going to work? And I was like, you just let me handle it.
That sounds like it's going to be really fun, though, to kind of like a very, is it like a
experimental?
Whimsical, yeah, kind of just like, let's take what we've got and then working mechanics into story instead of story into mechanics.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's exact. I was like, let me just see what you have, and I'm going to work out how this is all going to work together. Just trust me, it's going
to work
out.
That's going to be an interesting puzzle to do, like to work outside or inside out instead of outside in.
Yeah.
Do you know at this stage if your game that you're making is a good drinking or strip game?
Because if it's not, you might want to start interested. Over.
Yeah.
The answer should be yes to both.
But yeah, Matt is by all accounts a brilliant programmer.
Yes.
And
I just realized a strip game in VR is useless, right? Because you have a because you have a headset on.
That's pornography. Yeah,
also dangerous.
Well, yeah, no, but you have a headset on. You can't even, you know, whatever. Also, you can't drink. Can you drink?
Yeah, you can. Your mouth is free.
The game's over when you have to strip off your headset.
Did you say it goes over your ass?
Eyes?
Oh. I've been playing these wrong.
We got assless chaps, you know? Right over. Nice.
That explains that.
We know how Chinmore rolls up to a party.
Happened one time.
Too many.
No. All right, so we're going to start wrapping this up. But we like to usually finish with some trivia.
Yeah.
And Kat, you got some for this week?
I do. I have a mixture of board game trivia and video game trivia. This time I'm going multiple choice because it's a little
more difficult.
So we're going to do same method as usual. When you think you have the answer, go ahead, raise your hand.
And I will say it's okay because this method falls apart by question two.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you know it, just say the
yeah,
answer.
Just say it.
Who's playing?
Everybody but me.
Yeah. okay. She looked them up earlier. I have no idea what these are.
Sure you don't. Chin, we'll see.
Okay.
If you win, I'll contest it. If I win, I will not.
Someone want to pull his mic? Just pull the cord. Thank you.
All right, so the first one we have is, how much money do you get for passing Go in Monopoly?
200.
See, you didn't even play by the rules.
You said at least one turn, Chinmo.
Oh, I know. I'm going to skip the next question. I'm done. All right.
Is he right?
Yes, he's okay. Right. Yeah. All right, who is not a character in Clue? Is it Miss Scarlet, Mr. Black, Reverend Green, or Mrs. White?
Is it Reverend Green?
Yes.
Reverend Green.
Yeah. I was like, this one is going to be a little easy. But.
That's a character from The World's End with Simon Pegg.
Huh.
Fun fact.
Well, I don't know if it's fun.
This
fact.
One's
it's a fact.
This one's for our resident Nintendo boy.
That's me.
What year was the first Nintendo game console released in America? Do you know without multiple choice?
I think, is it 85?
Yeah.
Okay. Whew, God, that would have sucked to get wrong.
What was it? What was the original system?
The NES.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
You freak bitch.
I feel like that was just uncalled for.
Imagine if Virtual Boy was first.
It was ahead of its time.
Are you an 85 boy?
No, 84 boy.
Oh.
Yeah, so I was like priming up, ready for that. Ready
yeah, he could NES before he could even walk.
Yeah.
You were first gen.
I'm first gen.
Oh, that was good.
All right, the next one is also Nintendo based. What town shows up frequently in the Legend of Zelda series? Is it Central City? Oh.
Oh, well, why don't you give this?
No. If you know without multiple choice,
go for it.
Well, it could be a few of them.
What
would be your, before she goes off, what would be your guess?
Kikoriko Village?
Yep.
Okay. What were you going to say, Tim?
That one.
Okay, he said that one. Off mic.
All right, this is back to tabletop. What year was D&D first published? 1977, 1974, 1980, or 1982?
I just want to steal this from Chin, who was like very excited.
Go for it.
Because I don't know the answer, but I'm going to wager.
I don't either, actually. I just have a gut.
Oh, 82.
Chin was just really confident about all of his wild guesses.
I do. If you go in with a wild guess, if you sound confident with it, everybody's like, all right, this guy.
All right, well, fine.
Deliver in your most confident voice what you think the answer is.
I can't anymore because I don't remember the answers. 74.
That's right. That's correct.
Well, you were confident in giving.
That was one of those ones where you're like, it's the earliest one. It's the one that seems ridiculous.
Well, I said 82, so I was wrong.
Yeah, you weren't the opposite end. And Amanda got that right, too. She's just off mic.
I did.
She probably got it right before you did, and you just heard her answer.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yep.
No.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a team effort. Can we go with team effort?
Sure, sure.
All the episodes turn against me by the end. And we need to.
It's something about spending an hour in a room with you.
Man, I'm so happy we invited Brian.
All right, last one. What was the original animal choice for Crash Bandicoot? Was it a wombat, Tasmanian devil, aardvark, tiger, or panther? Amanda.
I'm completely guessing, but I think it was the Tasmanian devil. Mm-mm. No.
Which makes sense because he spins a lot.
Was it an aardvark?
No.
So it's got to be wombat.
Yeah, it was wombat. He was originally Willy the Wombat, which would not have sold.
I like it.
And there we have a classic example of product meets product marketing.
It's funny that Crash Bandicoot is
this
a much
game
more
seems
90s.
Great. What is he? He's a wombat. He certainly is not.
He's a bandicoot.
He's a bandicoot.
What's is that a real animal?
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that was a real animal.
Yeah. I just quickly want to talk
about... He's a crash.
Yeah. He's a crash.
What was the... Kat, you know this. You love Crash, but what's the mask name in that? The tiki thing?
It's like the Aku Aku mask, but I always call him Huli Biga because that's the sound he makes.
I always remember the noise. I never had the game.
Yeah, it was like Huli Biga.
Then who the heck is Professor Cortez?
He's the Cortex. He's the villain.
My apologies.
Yeah, Professor Cortex is the villain. He kidnaps your girlfriend Coco, and you have to save her.
Also,
I will.
How dare you besmirch that Dr. Robotnik ripoff?
I'm trying to make it an iced tea joke here.
Like the rapper or the drink?
Yeah.
May I ask why?
Oh, because the girlfriend's name is Coco.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And she is blonde, too. She's a curvy blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just occurring to me that Ice-T is married to Coco.
Yep. I think you say it's occurring to you that Ice-T is Crash Bandicoot.
Actor, musician Ice-T is married. His name is Ice-T, and he's married to Coco.
Yep.
I'm so sorry, you guys, but who is Coco?
It's Ice-T's wife.
Ice-T's wife.
That doesn't help me.
That's all you need to
know.
That's
been established already.
She was like a video vixen in the 90s.
And they're still married?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in love, dude.
They just had a baby. Her name is Chanel.
No, that's wrong.
Why do you know this?
Her name needs to be like fruit juice or something.
It's Ice U.
Lemonade?
Okay, Jen.
Yeah.
Where can we leave this room?
Pewter.
Oh,
pewter.
There it is.
Yep. All right. So now that we've talked about games that you guys have invented, what games do you wish you had invented?
I will say this, that Kat brought this up to me when we were talking about like a day or two ago when we were going over like the rundown for this. And it can be tabletop. It can be... Video games. It could be game shows, because as soon as she said it, the first thing that came into my mind was Price is Right.
Which is such a good answer.
I love that show.
Yeah, great answer.
Good answer.
That's my answer.
Good answer.
Good answer. All right, good answer.
Yeah, I'll throw you a bone, Chin. That was a good answer.
Thank you, Brian. All right. Someone else.
I think I wish I would have invented Mario, because it's such a pop culture icon. It's a staple in video gaming. It's like one of the... It's a gateway video game.
And that you're like one of your hobbies is plumbing.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, that works. All right.
Yeah, and I've been working.
He's not a
nice
plumber
mustache.
Anymore.
I know they retcon that, right?
They retcon that.
Yeah.
He just said he used to be a plumber.
He's retired plumbing. Yeah. He's made enough money. He doesn't have to do that anymore.
I mean, to be honest, he's done very little plumbing since I've known him.
I don't think I've ever seen him pick up a wrench.
No,
he does.
Does he pick up a wrench?
I don't know.
I know there's a mole that throws wrenches.
Yeah, but that's not him. Put it on a pipe.
I think you're going back to Clue now.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Oh, Mario imagine does bludgeon people with a wrench.
Imagine your plumber being like, I fixed the toilet. You know what it was? An army of Goombas.
That is one way to describe it.
I cleaned out all your Goombas for you. Thank you.
Okay, so my game that I wish I had invented isn't necessarily one that I like, a game that I play a lot. No, I wish I'd come up with that, but it's more like I could have come up with that, because those are the worst things, like as a game designer, when you're like, oh, I had that idea like 5 years ago, like why didn't I just do it? And that actually just happened yesterday, where I was looking through my notes, because me and Matt always do this together, like we have a shared Google Notes thing and we'll just write down game ideas whenever it comes to us. So I was looking through that the other day, and there was one that was like, it was, I must have taken it right when the HTC Vive came out, and I was like, cats on a conveyor belt and something about editing them. And that was all that the note said. And then I had gotten an email that day with, like, this new VR game, and I can't even actually remember the name, but it was, like, really popular, and it's literally that. It's, like, cats on a conveyor belt, and you have to match what the pet owner wants the cat to look like. Like, you can switch out their nose, kind of like Mr. Potato Head for cats, and you switch out, but it's all in VR. And I was like, this
was
literally...
That's verbatim your game, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, this is literally what we came up with, like, 2 years ago.
Do you think that that's a situation, and it's because this has happened to me before, where you saw it, forgot you saw it, and then designed that game?
No, definitely not, because I had never seen this before.
Because I have definitely done that.
But yeah, that happens too, for sure.
That's what Knock Knock is.
I think this was based off of my own cats, like, in real life. Like, they were just going past, and I was like, what if I swapped out Cap's tail with Ari's tail, and then, like, swapped their colors?
Oh, man, what a sexy cat.
is the game...
It got real weird.
The game that...
But that's like how dudes...
Just
talk.
Got weird.
Shitty dudes.
It's locker room talk.
Fuck
deal
boys.
With it.
It's how fuck boys talk when they're like...
We talk about switching tails
dude,
on cats.
Dude, her tits with her face. Like, that's what... You did that with cats, basically.
You just made it real weird.
I mean, both sound really hot, though. Like, I'm going to pop my shirt off. Is that okay?
Do it.
It honestly is so hot.
I honestly don't know exactly what's happening.
I don't either. All right, BWK, which game do you wish that you invented?
Oh, there are so many. There are so many games that I see and I'm like, ooh, that's so great. Like Werewolf, for example.
Oh, yeah, that game is great.
It's just a card game.
Mafia, as a lot of people know
it. You made a version of it.
Yeah, well, I made a Scream version of it.
Which I love.
I've also played, and I will say right now, I hate horror movies, and I don't like scary things, but that was a damn fun version of that game.
It's not scary, Chin.
Scream is scary. Scream is a scary movie.
No.
That's a story for a different time, and not going to happen right now.
I am pushing so hard for a podcast called Scaredy Cat or something like that, where it's Cat and Chinmo, who neither of them
both
really
them on conveyor belts.
Exactly. And you like mix and match the parts of Chinmo and Cat to make the perfect human, to make the perfect podcast host. It's them watching horror movies that neither of them want to watch, like kind of
between
the creases in their fingers over their eyes.
Can I add
and then
one
talking
thing
about them
to
afterwards?
It?
Yeah.
Well, since we're designing this
of
game
course.
Now, can we also put in theme park rides?
Oh no!
Because I still hear Kat screaming when she was on the roller coaster.
I do.
At Disney
I gotta tell
World.
You, I'm better with roller coasters and theme park rides than Kat is.
Oh
but
no! See, I'm better with scary movies than you.
Yeah, so
are.
We could balance each other. I'll do the
what
roller coaster.
What if we watch
stuff,
scary movies on roller coasters?
Ooh!
Actually, you know what? I'd be okay because I would be distracted and wouldn't. Pay
as
attention
a follow up
to
this, I think you have to share that photo in the.
Yes, that's my favorite
episode.
Of all time.
It's so good.
I have. No lie, 5 framed versions of that picture.
Because it's amazing.
Can I have 4 of them?
And just for context, what we're talking about here is having gone to Disney World with our friends.
This is what, probably
going on
2
the
years ago,
Seven Dwarfs
ago?
Minecart ride.
Katrina's.
Say that one
more time.
Katrina.
The
every,
seven
so,
Dwarfs Minecart.
Everybody in the picture smiling, laughing, hands in the air, enjoying it. We just waited an hour and a half in the line for this ride.
Don't. It was 2.5.
Yeah,
easy.
Such a good time. Katrina had the look of someone who just watched The Ring in real life.
Somebody who just watched her like parents stuck in a wood chipper.
It was.
Yes.
I remember I was in the front like 2 cars of that ride because there was like probably about 15 of us, so
yeah.
We took up a majority of the ride. I remember being in like the front car or two, and you were towards the back. And I remember about halfway through, we're like, "Why is someone hurt? Like, what is that?" And we're like, "Oh my god, it's Kat."
No, it was me. And I remember too that happened on the Harry Potter ride.
I remember
that's where
you
that's
it
where
was
I can
a sound
hear your
I did. I was with our friends DJ and Brian. I had never been on the ride before, so I had no idea what to experience. And we were on for not even 2 minutes, and I was like, "Man, there was like they got a like really good like it's an awesome ride if you've never been on it." But it's like there's sound everywhere, and there was literally like yelling everywhere. I'm like, okay, I get that at some parts.
Well,
why
there
is that
are
yelling
like dementors
part?
And spiders and dragons.
And
like, I wasn't scared of those because I did not have my eyes open for even a second.
Yeah, But we could hear it through the whole thing, and it turned. I thought it was like a sound effect, and it turns out it was the cart behind us, which is a good distance away, and it was Kat yelling the entire time.
I remember our friend Brian just cracking up laughing the entire ride because you didn't stop screaming. It wasn't like ah, it was like constant staccato screaming.
It was almost musical and beautiful.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that ride jerks you around a lot, one. And two, while we were going into it, the guy made me move to the end instead of the middle in this, like, the
four-seat structure.
I remember
you yelling and complaining about that after.
And then he clicked the barrier down two clicks and said, that's okay. Or, like, that should be fine. And I was like, that should be fine as I'm being lifted up into the ride.
So just this ride is made for six-year-olds. Anyway, So I really wish I had invented.
Yeah, let's get back to it.
On
our theme park episode, we'll be diving into that very much more. Thank you for divulging us through that tangent.
Yeah. Werewolf is such an awesome, simple card game that it requires people to work together and also betray each other. And I love that concept for a game, so I love that. But then on the video game side, and I'm sorry to pick two, I...
Don't be sorry at all.
No, I'm picking two video games. three total. Really love the ideas behind Mario Galaxy. I know you picked Mario Kart, but I'm going to kind of throw my hat into Mario Galaxy. It is just so clever and cool. It makes me feel like such a kid in a modern day. Like, I was an adult man playing Mario Galaxy, in my pajamas and, staying up all night, falling asleep in front of the TV because I just felt like such a kid. It was so beautiful. I loved it. I wish I could create that experience for people. That's awesome. And then my last video game is WarioWare because it is wacky, crazy, and anyone can pick it up and play it, and it's just an instant party.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of people just, like, passing around a controller, being forced to play silly things and laughing at each other. Most of the ideas I have for, like, oh, I wish I had made that, revolve around the way it makes people feel. And, like, I think all game designers, I think everybody in this room who's touched game design in some way, the reason why you do it is because you want people to feel that sense of, like, happiness and
joy. You
want them to enjoy.
It's to have people have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and
the point of a game.
And you build that, and if you can create that experience for other people, it's what makes you envious of another game.
Well said, sir.
And you're like, damn, everyone's having such an awesome time. I wish I had given them this awesome time. And then you do when you create your own game.
That's how I feel about the Jackbox games. Those are so fun to play as a group. Mm-hmm. Is that what you were going to say? Sorry.
I was about to say that, actually. It was that, like, that, because it's not that it was simple to create, because I know personally that a lot goes into any kind of game, even the simplest design. There's, like, so much behind the scenes that you don't see. But that game specifically, those are, like, it's such a simple idea. Like, now that everybody has smartphones, everybody gets together for a party, so it's, like, how can you make a digital game that everybody can play without needing this kind of, like, needing to have a system and needing to have enough controllers. And it was, like, just such a brilliant idea. If you're not familiar with it, it's like everybody can play together as long as they have a smartphone, and then you stream it to the TV, and there's all kinds of different mini games that you can play in a party setting.
Sort of like WarioWare.
I never played that one, but
WarioWare is great. But I mean, just taking advantage of the technology that exists now, which is everybody has a fucking smartphone that can connect to the internet, and they do I love Jackbox, but not all the games are as good as some of the games, you know what I mean? And for me, the game TKO, for anybody that's ever played it, that game is just fucking genius. It's everybody draws a picture, and then people submit a bunch of captions, and then your job is to take a randomized selection of those pictures and captions and make the best t-shirt that you can. And I mean... I would never come up with that idea, and I think it's a great idea, and it ends up being a great party game. And
have you ever played Space Team?
I love Space
Team.
That's
a fun one.
Yeah, that's another one that's like it's not like it's technically on iPhone and Android, right? But it's not really like a game on iPhone and Android. It exists like outside of those things. Like, you just use the smartphone to interact with the people around you. It's a really people are being so clever with technology these days. I love it.
Anyway. Is that so? Jackbox is your, if I could invent it, that's what it would be.
No, hers is the cat conveyor game.
So mine would be specifically probably TKO. Also, I really like Quiplash because I'm
that's another Jackbox game.
It is.
I really enjoy that game.
It's very like jokey. It's just. Yeah, Chinmo always kicks ass at that game.
It honestly reminds me of, we can actually probably get into this very quick because we're already running over time, but it reminds me of my favorite like party game, which is Boulder Dash.
Yeah, and it's totally.
It's a fun. You get a little quick prompt, and you got to just go off of it, make it funny, make it like however you want, and it just reminds me. It's very fun. It's a fun party game.
So that game to me is the Jackbox games are to me something where somebody explains the concept to you, and you're like, that is a great idea. Mario is not that for me. Like if somebody explained Super Mario to me, I'd be like, ooh, I don't know. It's like, yeah, he's a plumber. He goes in to these pipes, and then he jumps on monsters. I'd be like, ooh, I don't know about this. And then I feel the
that
same way.
Just really grabbed me.
So this takes me to my second choice, which thanks, BWK, for setting the precedence of.
Hey, I did three. You can do up to three.
Yeah.
But no more than three. Those are the rules.
And that is Zelda. Like, my favorite game franchise of all time is probably The
now,
Legend
I
of
know
Zelda.
That's like a long range. I'm going to put you on the spot. What would be your, out of that whole franchise, what would be your number one?
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, of course.
But because it's so innovative while still being so true to the franchise. And so to me, it is the quintessential version of that game. It would either be that or Ocarina of Time. That's probably a really boring, non-controversial answer, but those are my two favorite Zelda games, hands down.
Okay, fair enough. I like it. Okay, you know what? I mentioned it briefly, so we'll go through it because I already said Boulder Dash, but very quickly, everybody just want to throw out their favorite party game. It could be one of the ones you've already mentioned, like Werewolf is a fantastic party
game. That's probably mine.
My favorite party game is Strip Knock Knock.
Hell yeah, my brother. You're going to have to make those house rules. No, actually, the game is really terrible for stripping.
We'll find out later.
Oh, yeah. Play Strip Conquest? No.
You guys haven't been?
Well, Chin, what was the game you wanted to invent? I forgot.
The game I wanted? Price is Right.
That's right. The great answer.
It's, it's like a wager game. You have a bunch of different mini games, which I always enjoy. Like, I love Mario Party. Where
like, WarioWare.
And Strip Price is Right is also great.
With Drew Carey.
Like, WarioWare.
Guys, I think we should just go play Strip WarioWare, is what I'm really getting out of all this.
All right. Fine. All right. Let's
wrap
this up.
Have played, cause I've actually, like, I've never played. So
I've never played WarioWare.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hope it comes to Switch.
Yeah.
Then I could just. Cool. My Switch is in my car.
All right, Amanda, Kat, you guys want to answer really quick?
Favorite party game?
Yeah.
I love Cranium.
Ooh, good one.
So, again, because it's all the little mini game components of it. And
like WarioWare.
Yeah. And also, Heads Up is super fun. It's still really fun to play.
Can I just say really quickly, I was in Disney last week, and waiting in line, everyone is playing Heads Up.
It's
a perfect on-the-go fun game. I
kills your battery in 20 seconds.
And I use it all the time with kids. And I can say you will never be more entertained than watching kids play that game.
It's so fun. It's awesome. Watching Tim play that game.
This episode features Chinmo watching a lot of kids.
That was BWK at the beginning.
Hey, have you ever played Strip Heads Up? Oh, bad time to mention it.
Yeah.
This is by far.
Yeah, it's gone off the rails.
Oh, Jesus.
You're going to have to put explicit on this.
I'm going to agree with Cranium and Heads Up. I don't know about Strip Heads Up, but that was actually one that popped up on my Facebook like this a year ago today. Earlier today. No, not Strip. Just playing old Heads Up. And it was only, because a lot of people play it in like a big group. Like you said, playing in, when you're waiting in line is like great for, you know, when you have a lot of people. But it was just me and Matt, and we were just playing in the backyard. And it was just this hysterical clip that I'd posted on Facebook of him trying to explain something. I think that and Jackbox we already mentioned, but that's my other favorite like party game, just because it's so easy.
Great.
Anything that's like easy, especially because usually when we're all hanging out, we're all drinking. So if you could easily pick it up and get going with it.
Also, quick shout out to That's You. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very similar to Jackbox, a little bit more Wes Anderson vibe to it.
Can I give a quick shout out to WarioWare?
This episode
is that a new
you by
independent
WarioWare.
Game? I haven't heard of that.
That game was from like 2005.
And quite possibly a new sponsor after this.
Yeah. If you're listening, we love Wario.
Nintendo, this one's for you.
We need to end this episode.
Yeah, this is this is where I think we're going to wrap it up.
Well, so if you want to tell us about any of your brilliant game ideas, your favorite party games,
your favorite mini game in WarioWare,
feel free to email us at conquestpod@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at conquestpodcast or send us a picture of your favorite game
on Facebook. Twitter, we're all over the place.
Yep, just Conquest Podcast everywhere.
Should we have our guests plug their shit?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to give us a second, Tim, we were getting there.
I didn't know if you were getting there. I didn't want it to be like, be excellent to each other, and then there was no
opportunity. What do you think? This is our first episode. This is our fourth, Tim. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, also, whose podcast is this?
You know what, Tim? You know what I like about you is you're unpredictable and random, and you say anything, just like WarioWare.
WK, you want to plug anything?
I can't wait to go back. Besides WarioWare, I can't wait to go back and count how many times that game has been mentioned.
WarioWare Smooth Moves is out on. seriously though, I host a pop culture comedy podcast called The Top Five of Death. It's you can find it at. you can just search Top Five of Death and you'll find it.
Always the number five, not the word five.
Oh yeah, yes. Search the number five. Yep. Where we talk about different top five lists each week.
It's always fun. It's always a fun listen.
Yeah.
Thank you. My God. it's a high stakes podcast where we have to have the best list or we get killed. So that's Top Five of Death. And then also, I guess, just keep your eye out for Knock Knock. You can go to... Oh, shit, I should probably know the website name, huh?
Wait, you know what? Before, while you get that, I mean, I'm pretty sure we talked about this before, but next week's episode of Top 5 is Top 5 Minigames in WarioWare.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, my God. Yep. That's such a good idea. Yeah. I can't wait to pitch it to the boys.
I can't wait for an all BWK episode.
Just be me. So I don't know the actual, but it's on Tumblr. You can go to knockknockcards.tumblr.com. There is an actual URL that I own, but I can't remember it.
Okay.
You can send it to us later and we'll share it.
Yeah, we'll post it on
Twitter. Yeah. There's nothing on the website right now, but if you go, you can sign up for updates, and then I'll let you know as soon as it's ready.
Yeah, awesome. Maybe.
Tim?
Long pause.
Some really weird stuff going on with the microphone. So I want to plug Wasted Minds. That is the company that we are using to launch Drinking Buddies whenever we get around
to
actually
host this podcast.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah, so we host Conquest there. Also have another podcast there called Rhythm and Brews where I interview my friends about different topics where we kind of integrate beer and music. We play drinking games together. It's a lot of fun. And we've got other podcasts coming in the near future, some really fun things in the pipeline, so be on the lookout for that. Wasted-minds.com is the website. You can check out news on Drinking Buddies and the Kickstarter campaign there, all of our different new podcasts, and our blog as well.
And I don't have anything official yet, but anything that me and Matt are working on that we're going to start coming out with soon, I'll be posting on my own personal, like on my Instagram and Twitter, I guess, which is underscore ALT236 on Instagram and Twitter.
Underscore ALT236?
Yes.
He's looking
I'm
up
searching
right now.
You right now.
All right, well,
keep up to date.
He didn't ask me mine, so
you spelled it out.
Because you're it's already right. friends. Gosh,
you got it. I want to thank all of our guests and
thank you guys. It's been a
crazy
blast,
which will be
you here.
Most likely a extra long episode.
Yeah.
But I can't this wait.
This was really fun.
This was a blast.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you all for coming. I think that's gonna about wrap it up. So adios, amigos.
And remember to be excellent to each other.
Let's go play WarioWare.
End episode.
Dicks.